You're listening to the Visibly Fit Podcast. Hey, I'm your host, Wendy Pett, and every week I'll give you holistic, practical solutions for everyday issues related to nutrition, healing, functional fitness, and behavior modifications. As a naturopath, fitness expert, and wellness coach for over 20 years, my goal is to empower you to reach for greater health and to rise up to your next level of living in mind, body, and spirit. You were created with greatness in mind. It's time to own it. Are you with me? Then let's dive in. Hello and welcome. Welcome to this monumental episode of the Visibly Fit Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Pett. Why is this monumental? Well, it is our 200th episode celebration. Wow. I mean, that blows my mind. I mean, that's creeping up almost 4 years, which I can't even believe that because I love doing this podcast so much. And what an incredible journey this has been, let me tell you. But I have to really tell you that it wouldn't have been possible without you. You are such incredible, devoted listeners. And I just want to thank you. Thank you deeply because I am so grateful. Because without you, well, I'd just be talking to myself, I guess. And I wouldn't have the desire to bring on the guests that I do and to have the solo shows with the topics that I talk about if I didn't hear from you and have the great comments that you are getting fed and really understanding more and more about health and well-being, mind, body, spirit, emotions with every episode that that we put out. So I'm just so grateful. So today, I just thought it would be fun to take a moment just to reflect on those powerful episodes that have defined this show over the last 100 episodes. I did this on the first 100, but now it's 200 episodes. So we'll take the last 100 episodes and we'll just revisit those. And I just want to highlight the top 12 shows that captured your hearts and minds. And we're going to be just featuring some insights from some of the truly remarkable guests that have been on the show that have shared their wisdom and experiences and a few of my solo shows, but it's been all based on what you've watched and what you've liked and those that have the highest ranking in the last 100 episodes. So each episode has truly been a stepping stone, but together we have explored the depths of health and wellness and personal information and transformation. And really, I think it's just really a time to celebrate that journey. So whether you've been with us just a short while, maybe this is your first episode and you're thinking, wow, I'm just learning about this at episode 200. Good news, you can go back and listen to all the previous episodes. But if you've been with us on this journey for the last 200 episodes, thank you, thank you, thank you. But I want you to get ready to relive some of the most impactful stories and lessons and just education that has really shaped Visibly Fit. So let's just jump right in and honor this incredible milestone together. All right, here we go. Enjoy the show. There's over 9,200 known forever chemicals that we're dealing with on a daily basis. And these chemicals can linger in our environment for decades and even centuries. I mean, it's awful, you guys. And it not only lingers in our environment, they can linger in our bodies. And that's the biggest issue. We want to be able to detox from these chemicals and stop using products that are leaching these chemicals and causing havoc on our bodies and causing dis-ease in the body. Disease such as, you know, heart disease and cancers and even causing birth defects. And, you know, pregnant women actually, they are transmitting these chemicals to their babies before they're even born. They've been testing just the umbilical cords, and there's hundreds of PFAS already that have been transmitted to the baby before the baby's even born through the mom. Yeah, right? Like we would think that the baby's protected, you know, with the placenta and all, but no, that's not true. So we have to be very cognizant and aware of what we're putting on our skin, in our body, and how our environment is, okay? Now, these forever chemicals really started to play a big role in the 1940s, you know, after the Depression, and then after just people started to thrive and get creative and start to really create different technologies to make life easier.
Pleasure winds up being this unbelievably important signal that in psychology, we recognize that neurobiology. This is the process that the mind recognizes that something really valuable for biology has taken place. So the two most valuable things in biology are food for survival and sex for reproduction. So it's no surprise that if we study neurobiology, we're going to find that a flood of a chemical called dopamine in an area of the brain that we call the dopamine pathway, really imaginative. Mm-hmm. They also call it the reward pathway. Reward so center. It's like, okay, so we actually have something hitting a sensory nerve in a way that indicates that it's good for our biology. So we put something in our mouth that's tasty. The mind says, yes, you need to be rewarded for doing what you just did by putting that in your mouth, because that's going to increase your likelihood of survival. Mm. So that's what pleasure is. Okay. So you can be pleasured in other ways. You can feel very pleasurable to be in a fireplace when our hands are cold. Mm-hmm. That also will cause a little bit of a different chemical. It won't be dopamine, but it'll be endorphin. Right. But both of these are the two big pleasurable responses that take place. And the pleasure trap, I knew you were getting ready to interrupt.
I was getting ready.
You were going to too, Bill.
The pleasure trap is, yes.
Pleasure trap is when human beings have manufactured artificial levels of stimulation that cause the stimulation to be greater than it was in nature. Mm. And when you do that, it feels like it's a really good deal. It feels like this is the right thing to do. But the truth is it's kind of like putting jet fuel in your car. You know, if you did, you'd rev the engine and would be like, wow, you know, now I can, this is amazing. The performance increases. But then we find out after 3,000 miles, you burned out your engine.
Right, right.
Okay. So you can essentially like a fairly good example of this is young people listening to really loud rock music. Mm. It's like the intensity, however it is that they make it a given song that some kid likes, he really likes the sound. He's designed by nature to actually like the human voice and instrumentation. Mm-hmm. Okay. But he turns it on so loud, he does damage to his ears.
Correct. Yeah.
And so the pleasure trap is the story of how the modern food supply mm-hmm. has been crafted in the last really 50 and 75 years to turn itself into something that's pretty a perversion mm-hmm. of natural food.
It's like and counterfeit.
Totally. It's
counterfeit comforts.
You know? Totally what it is.
Yeah.
As a result of that, it's extremely compelling. It's very hard for people to stay out of it. And yet that battle of staying out of that trap, that's the battle of our lives when it comes to trying to keep ourselves healthy and well.
Yeah, no, it's really good. And I love the way you explain it, because I don't think people think that they're in a pleasure trap.
Avocado pit. Everyone knows how to remove an avocado pit, right? No, some people don't. Again, I take this stuff for granted because I just do it all the time. But when you cut an avocado, right, when you cut it in half, twist off the top, and then you take your knife carefully, take your knife and just kind of barely put it in the seed, like smack it into the seed and twist it out, and it comes right out of that avocado. All right. So it's time saving. And then you can just peel off the skin. So that's easy. It is squash season. And you may have a few squash on your counter like I do, and they're hard to cut into. Now, you know, I'm not a huge microwave fan, but I'm not, you know, I'll use it from time to time. That's just honesty right there. So for a squash, I might use my microwave. I might pierce my squash several times as if you would a potato or something, but pierce my squash and then put it in the microwave for about 5 minutes to just kind of soften it up. And then you can cut into that squash much easier. So that's a hack. That's a time saving, solution. So you don't have to put it in the oven in order to even cut it, or actually, you know, hurt yourself trying to cut into it. So that's a good hack. Chia or flax egg. I use flax egg a lot, and it's just 1 tablespoon of flax, ground flax, and then 2 to 2.5 tablespoons of warm water. Mix that up, let it just kind of sit until it gets gelled, and then that becomes your quote unquote egg. So most people know this, but not everybody.
When we have patients with severe digestive health problems, their quality of life is damaged so badly because, you know, we love food, right? And having good digestion is so integral to being healthy that when we have people with poor digestion, their health, their life, their quality of life is very poor generally. In fact, only 25% of patients with, for example, Crohn's disease would describe that they have a good quality of life. For example, people with severe abdominal symptoms, the so-called irritable bowel syndrome patients, would on average give a decade of life expectancy if they could just normalize their gut function. Having poor digestive health has a dreadful impact on our quality of life and our well-being and our mental health. What I noticed, Wendy, that is if we could find our patients a route to better gut health, whether that was through diet or medication, we could absolutely revolutionize their quality of life. And it was
and change witnessing the hospital food.
And well, that's the next mission. We're still on that mission, right? But I noticed as a young doctor that if we could, that in this specialty of gastroenterology, there was huge capacity to improve people's quality of life. And once I realized that, I was absolutely hooked. And in those years, we have become more and more interested in digestive health as a culture. It's become so interesting. You know, there's this old saying from like 2,500 years ago from Hippocrates of Kos, the so-called father of modern medicine in ancient Greece, 2,500 years ago. He taught his followers that all health begins in the gut.
I don't have to go to the gym and spend an hour at a time to work out. I can do this throughout my day and start making movement part of my lifestyle. Again, the body starts to atrophy just after 20 minutes of not working against gravity. So if you are sitting all day long, you need to stand up. You need to do some calf raises. You need to do some squats. If you're standing all the time, squat down or do some calf raises. We have to work against gravity. Instead of taking elevators and escalators, take the stairs. Always take the stairs. It really does make a big difference. Does it take a little bit longer? Sure. Not a lot longer, but a little bit longer. I was just at a conference speaking not too long ago, and I think I was on floor 12 or 13, and I took the stairs as much as possible. And I'm telling you, yes, I felt it. I was a little sore, but it was so worth it because I know it was good for my heart. I always felt energized, especially like midday when you have those midday slumps and we were able to take a break and go back to our room for whatever reason. You know, instead of taking the elevator, I took the stairs and all of a sudden I had more energy. That slump was gone. So a lot of times you just need movement. Don't reach for caffeine. Don't reach for sugar. Please, please, please don't. Your body just needs movement. We need to get the blood pumping, the heart going. And also, I mean, it will help with clarity of mind and help you have a better attitude and just, you know, release those positive endorphins, that dopamine, so that you are a happier person when you are moving. So movement matters.
I was 52, almost 53 when I met my husband, Bill. I didn't know he was my husband at first. I was 54 and a half, if we're counting half years, when I walked down the aisle, because
it
at that point I was counting. I didn't want to be on the 5-year plan. I told Bill when I met him, but the bottom line is God can do great things late in the game. When I wrote my first book, You Are a Prize to Be Won, I was going through such deep heartbreak after a guy broke up with me after a year of dating. And I thought he checked all the boxes and I really was more in love with the idea of being married and than I was with him, and God showed me that later, but boy, did the heartbreak feel real. And so God told me to write about my test, and that's where the first book was born. Mm-hmm. And this book is really just to show people that you didn't miss it. You know, when I was going through that heartbreak, I heard God say, it's not too late. You didn't miss it. And now I'm going to bring you my best. And it was like, oh, and he didn't say that all at once. I heard you didn't miss it when I was out walking one day. And I mean, just tears started flowing. I was already in my late 40s by then. And then it was a year later or so when I was on a plane and I heard God say, now I'm going to bring you my best. I was actually complaining to the Lord, like, why did I waste that year with that guy? You know, I was younger, everything was firmer. And he's like, and he said, you're right. But now I'm going to bring you my best. So it was like, God, you win. And I just want to tell people that, you know, I just feel like I have this message of hope that God is no respecter of persons. And if you're still waiting, God can do it. Nothing is too hard for him.
Lyme itself is a sneaky little thing. It's a small little bacteria that hides and it goes into different forms. So it can be active and they can go into a cystic form. So it's really, really good at hiding in your body. So if you catch it early enough in the first 2 weeks after you kind of get bit by a tick, then antibiotics really do the trick and they really do take care of it. But after that time period, there can be a pretty significant problem because it can start to burrow down into different areas of the body and hide really well. So then you got to get sneaky. And then you start using all kinds of things that people will say, this worked really well for me, like Rife machines, or I had to do herbals, or I had to do fasting, or I do dry fasting. So there's a lot of different variables. And then once you do get Lyme, you're more predisposed to getting the other co-infections of Lyme. Mm-hmm. Mold in particular will cause chronic inflammatory response syndrome, or CIRS. And that's a brain inflammation, and there are certain inflammatory lab markers that'll go off, but it can affect a multitude of different things because it really starts to affect the leptin receptors in the brain, part of the brain called the hypothalamus. And then that can cause problems with regulating your fight or flight, your autonomic, so rest and digest. So we see sleep disturbances. It downregulates certain part of our immune system. So you can get certain infections. We see very commonly with both Lyme and mold, a nasal infection here called Marcon's that can be hard to treat. It's an antibiotic resistant staph infection with biofilm. Biofilm is when they kind of conglomerate together. And so they're non-responsive to antibiotics or anything like that. So you have to break up the biofilm and then kill it. So there's a bit of an art to that. The biggest thing with mold is it can cause digestive problems, like I said, sleep problems. But the biggest thing is you have to find where the mold is coming from.
Right.
25% of the population have the genetics, the HLA-DR genetics, that are working for them. So it doesn't even matter if it's black mold. They can't get the mold spores out as efficiently out of their body. So you can have two people in the same house and one person has symptoms, the other person doesn't at all. And I'll just say this. A lot of times it's the women that have symptoms because the hormones and the environmental chemicals that mimic the hormones make that area of the brain, the hypothalamus and the leptin receptors, more sensitive to mold.
Interesting.
So we see a slightly different shift. So one of my biggest frustrations is when there's a spouse involved and he knows that the husband and he knows that the cost of mold remediation in a house,
it's expensive.
And he has no symptoms, but we've definitively outlined that the problem is mold.
Right.
Which I get. That's a stressor for him because it can, for me, I ended up having mold in my house and it ended up being an $80,000 issue.
$80,000. Wow.
Yes. So it was, that was kind of one of my wake up calls to what it could do just from a little bit of moisture.
Yeah. How can we mitigate the effects of aging? What's the best way? And I know your answer, but let's just kind of unpack it a little bit.
Well, based on studies of identical twins, only about 25% of the difference in lifespan between people is due to genetics. So for what we can do over the majority of which we have some control, we can turn to the blue zones, these areas of exceptional longevity around the world where they all share in common centering their diets around whole plant foods. So they're minimizing processed foods and meat, dairy, sugar, eggs, and salt, maximizing fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, beans, peas, chickpeas, and lentils, nuts and seeds, mushrooms, herbs, and spices, basically real food that grows out of the ground. These are our healthiest choices.
Yes. And so, what would you say to those that hear this message quite often, but then they see studies from the other camp, if you will, and they're like, but this study says that if I eat more like a carnivore, that I'm going to age better and be stronger? You know, what do you say to these people, and how do they really know? Because there is so much confusion out there for the average person with all the different studies that are, you know, out there, the studies, but it depends on who funds those studies, right? What would you say to that person of how to get the right information and to start taking action?
Well, there is no such study showing some kind of carnivore diet can help with longevity or aging. So you always have to look at the best available balance of evidence. And so, for example, there's only one diet ever proven to reverse the course of heart disease, number one killer of men and women in this country. And that's a plant-based diet. Like, if that's all a plant-based diet could do, reverse the number one killer of men and women, shouldn't that be the kind of default diet until proven otherwise? In fact, it could also be so effective in preventing, arresting, and reversing other leading killers like type 2 diabetes and high blood pressure, which seem to make the case for plant-based eating simply overwhelming at this point.
I get this call, and my dad's like, it's bad, it's bad. I remember him screaming, and I'm like, what do you mean it's bad? And he's like, Woody's dead. And I'm like, what do you mean Woody's dead? What do you mean Woody's dead? And I'm just like, what just happened? My dad's like, he goes, he's hanging. I'm like, what? He goes, he's hanging. And he was hanging from the rafters in our garage. And it was probably one of the most horrific. I'll never forget that call. And I can't imagine my dad having to make that call to me and discovering what he did. And that night when I was in the hotel room trying to figure it out, the coroner called and asked us a question. She asked if Woody was taking any medication. And the only medication Woody was taking was Zoloft. And she proceeded to say—
antidepressant.
Which is an antidepressant. She proceeded to say she might that she needed to take the bottle with her. It might have something to do with his death. And so that was kind of like clue number one, that the coroner actually even said, like, we might have to take it with us. And that was in 2003. And ironically, the other, because Woody left no note, and we both traveled so much for work that we always left notes. We checked in with each other, we left notes. And so I'm like, wait, Woody went on the biggest trip of his life and he didn't leave a message or a note? Well, you know, the first, you know, I always say that that coroner question was clue number one. And the other clue was the front page of our newspaper had an article that said the UK finds link between antidepressants and suicide in teens. And so really that, along with, you know, this deep, deep intuitive, like everything in my body was like, there is something that makes no sense, because Woody loved life. We had just like booked our 10-year anniversary trip. We were, you know, the kids, we just booked our vacation.
So he wasn't even, yeah, he wasn't even depressed. He went to the doctor because he wasn't sleeping. And this is what the doctor prescribed.
Yeah, he had no history of depression. Yeah, he had no history of depression. He had no history of mental illness or any of that. He just couldn't sleep. And, you know, because the drug at the time was, you know, first of all, it was given to him by his doctor. And, you know, which
and people
trust
their doctors, right? Right.
Yep. You trust. Yeah. And it's sold and advertised as safe and effective. That's the word. Mm-hmm. And I keep going safe and effective in my quotes. And then, and then it was FDA approved. And so, you know, why would you question? But, you know, really, again, everything in my body said, this doesn't make sense. And even my brother-in-law was like, something doesn't make sense. So he goes home that night and Googles Zoloft and suicide. Had no idea that the FDA in 1991 had a hearing on the emergence of violence and suicide with Prozac. And at that point did nothing. And now 13, you know, now in 2003, we now have Zoloft and Paxil, and it's approved for kids.
Well, change can feel hard, because here's the thing is, let me give you some science on this, is that your brain is wired to avoid discomfort. Because if you think about back in the day when we were running away from hungry lions, that was survival, right? danger, don't go there, that we might get eaten alive. And that's ingrained in us. And that's just the way that our bodies and brains physiologically are built. But in modern society, that doesn't get turned off automatically. We always are looking from a survival comfort. So anything that's risky or feels like it's difficult or there's change, because change is a challenge and not everybody's up to doing the work that's required in order to overcome a challenge. So we either get to choose whether we stay the same or change, but changing means exchanging, right?
Yeah.
And exchanging is an active word. It's something you have to like literally do. But the good news is that, and what the neuroscience is showing, that your brain can be rewired. So if you just think about it this way, your brain inside, if you looked at it from a scan, neurology of your brain, if you had to look at it under a microscope, they look like little trees. Mm-hmm. Isn't that amazing? So little it brain is. Cells look like trees. So, and what does God say? We need to stay connected to the vine, right? Mm-hmm. We need to stay connected so that we can become fruitful, so we can produce fruit and we can be fruitful for others. So if we have, you know, burnt up little trees and then the connections aren't there from trauma or, hurt or pain, those are not producing fruit. So God brings us into this place where we can rewire. And what is so exciting, and I know you can tell me, I get so excited about this, is that the science is catching up with the Bible. The Bible has long told us, renew your mind daily, you know, let go, forgive. Have the mind of Christ. And that can sound like cute Christian cliches, but they actually are not. They're based in what the studies have shown, is that when you take the active steps to renew your mind, you take that thought captive. So when negative Nancy wants to come and tell you how terrible you are and how awful and you're not worthy enough, you're going to say, stop. That's a lie. That's not truth. What's God's word says about me is I'm loved, I'm chosen, I'm, you know, and you start to recite, Jesus did that. That's one of the things the devil did, right? When he took him up the mountain, is try to make him say, well, who do you think you are?
Right.
And if we don't know who we are and whose we are, that we are royal children of the Most High, we are going to be allowed, we're going to allow the enemy just to trample on us and people, and we're not seeing our worth. So this is why, you know, the mindset stuff is, just so everyone knows, is that it's not woo-woo science. It's actually based on how we built. And when we marry the two and we realize that the science meets up with what the Bible has already told us to do, and all we need to do now is to take that knowledge and to put it in action, that is when we see our breakthrough.
So I want you to think about your one more. What does it look like? And is it one more where you are striving and stressing? Because that's really not going to help you. One more can be one more glass of water. I'm going to have a sip right here. Right here, I can feel my throat a little scratchy. But one more glass of water, right, can have a massive impact on your health. One more push-up can have an impact on your strength. One more minute, or I shouldn't say minute, but maybe even a second or two of like a hang, like a dead hang, can add more grip strength. And when you have more grip strength, it's been shown that you are able to live longer based on your grip strength. So we got to build upon the one mores, the one more second, the one more minute. Everything that we do that is one more, that isn't overtaxing us and stressing us to the max, but yet it's getting us into a discipline, it can have a positive impact on our health. I mean, think about just exercise and physical activity. What if you just embraced just one more, I don't know, walk around the block, one more mile, one more push-up, and maybe it is just the one more Visibly Fit 7x11, right? If you don't know what that is, go to my website and grab yours today for free, wendypett.com. You definitely want these exercises. But what if it's one more rep? It's the one more lap. It's that one more minute of exercise. See, it's not just It's really just the mindset. It's the discipline. It's all of that that encourages you to push beyond yourself and your perceived limits. I think those perceived limits are what keep us stuck, because we have only gone, you know, this far. So we've never maybe attempted that one more. What if you just attempted the one more? How would your life be different? Magnesium is actually one of the top five minerals that is most abundant in the human body, or it should be. It should be one of the most abundant. But again, the standard American diet is keeping that from happening, as well as agriculture, the agricultural industry. And so it's keeping people lacking. And this is a much needed electrolyte. It really is. So I was thinking about a study that I read the other day, and it was a study that was published in the Journal of the American Osteopathic Association. And it says that as much as half of the total United States population is magnesium deficient. Okay? More than half. I mean, that's a lot. That is a lot. If you aren't getting enough magnesium, then honestly, you are setting yourself up for metabolic disorders, osteoporosis, cardiac events, and much more, because your body cannot metabolize vitamin D if magnesium is not in play. So if you're deficient, it's a bigger issue than you might realize, okay? Magnesium helps to regulate your blood sugar levels, and it's also vital to support muscle and nerve function, as well as making protein and bone and DNA. Magnesium helps with our energy production. As most of you probably know too, it can be a really effective sleep aid, or just to help you calm, just kind of play that calming role in your life. Now, our body actually does not make magnesium naturally. So, and yet it's essential. So we have to figure out, how are we getting enough magnesium? You might be wondering, maybe why do you stretch after the workout? You can understand before, but after the workout is just as important, because after you have felt fatigued in your muscles through the workout, and you know your muscles retain, they get that pump, right? And the muscles are like somewhat shortened. They're shortened. So this shortening is mainly due to that repetition of intense muscle activity. So with those exercises that you're doing, the visibly fit exercises, for instance, then you've got that pump, and they're shortened. And so you've got to like take it through kind of more of a full range motion and get more of a stretch going, because that pumped muscle is full of lactic acid and, of course, other byproducts. But it's full of that lactic acid from the exhaustive workout. And so that muscle actually needs to be stretched afterward, or it will start to kind of retain that decreased range of motion as it kind of, I guess I'll say, it kind of forgets how to elongate itself. And so I don't know if you've ever seen people that are, you know, they work out a lot, they look good, but man, they have Zippo flexibility. Like they can barely reach down and touch their toes. And it's because they are forgetting to do the stretch, and they're not making it a daily habit. Yes, daily. It should be in part of your routine every day. Again, I said I'm not as great as my husband is at this. He's like 20, 25 minutes a day. I'm more like 7 to 10. So I could increase mine as well, but every little bit helps. And so it becomes more routine. And if maybe like, even if you're, I don't know, watching your favorite TV show, sit on the floor and start stretching instead of just sitting on the couch or whatever, and get your body used to going through the motions, because stretching removes that lactic acid and it reduces that tightness of the muscles. And again, it will elongate them again. And so it's really important if you're wanting to get stronger, actually, and actually to keep from being at risk for injury, honestly, because the more you are flexible, the less opportunity there are for you to get injured. I have had a few different experts on the show, on the podcast, to talk about heart rate variability, and maybe someone listening has not heard those yet.
So let's dive in. Let's talk about what HRV is, and let's talk about the significance and the ways in which it reflects your autonomic nervous system's functioning. So let's share a little bit, like break it down for us first.
Yeah. So this is about the autonomic nervous system, as you said. That is the system in our brain that we share with all vertebrates, from reptiles to mammals and to us. It's the foundation of our nervous system. And we have kind of overlooked it also as a doctor and the health care system because we haven't had a measure of it. But now we have with the heart rate and the wearables. So this system is divided in the parasympathetic part, the part that calms us down, the restorative state that we are made to be in most of the time. And the other part is the sympathetic part, the mobilizing, activating part that mobilizes us towards what we want or to flee away from what we don't want. So it has, of course, kept us alive. But we need to have a balance in this system. And the good thing is that the heart rate will show whether we are in the parasympathetic restorative state or in a stressful state. When we're in the parasympathetic state, when we breathe in, the heart rate goes up a little bit to take advantage of that there are more oxygen in the lungs. And then when we breathe out, the heart rate goes down a little bit. There's less oxygen in the lungs and it kind of slows down a little bit, measured in milliseconds only, but detectable by the wearables. If we are in the stress state, the heart rate will beat at a very steady pace regardless of we're breathing in or out. So that makes it possible for the wearables to find out how deep your restorative state is or how intense your stressful state is. And it will, of course, with artificial intelligence and computers in the watches and so on, give you an answer if your stress level is sustainable over time. And for so many people, it's not. For so many people, we are taxing our bodies and mind too much. And the immune system will underperform and lay the ground for all these different modern day diseases.
As you're working with your patients and injecting the stem cells to treat different autoimmune diseases and that kind of thing, obviously, you know, we're going after that chronic inflammation. I know you are a healthy individual, but you said a lot of these people are not healthy. And so we know, you and I know, and a lot of these people that are listening to the podcast know that it's also what they're eating, right? So are they also taught kind of how live
absolutely.
A healthier lifestyle?
Yeah.
Because it's not just like
it's
these stem cells
important.
Are going to take care
yeah.
of it.
The
you got to change.
So just like you don't live in a vacuum. The cells don't live in a vacuum. You've got to take care of
take
everything
care of
that's affecting the cells. So
right.
this is one reason, you know, I insisted when I founded the academy where I educate other physicians. It's called American Academy of Integrative Cell Therapy. I don't believe just cell therapy is not
no.
end all be all.
That's why I wanted
on...
to bring that up because
yeah.
it's not a blue pill situation.
No. So we have pre and post treatment recommendations. Diet is foundation. You
yes.
are made of what you eat, you know, whether or
yeah.
not you want to believe it. You know, there's some certain things that are just truths. So you know, the earlier you come on board, the better it is for you.
Yeah, stop that In-N-Out burger mess. I'm saying that because you're out in California. So
yeah, right. And exercise, you
yes.
know, activating all these mechanisms of healing, all these mm-hmm. genes to help you repair. And then detoxification, you know, if
yeah.
you're toxic, no matter how much cells I give you, you're going to be dragging in your healing process. So
yeah.
how can we detox? And so you as a naturopath, that's, you know, you guys are really good at that.
I'm just curious about stem cells. At that
yeah.
point, when there's no cartilage, can it help regrow cartilage at that point?
Actually, yes.
Yes.
I've seen a patient who I gave an IV infusion of stem cells, and she saw in her MRI that the knee cartilage actually regrew. It shocked her orthopedic surgeon because
sure.
the surgeon... I've never seen anything like it. How can you regrow your cartilage, right?
Yeah.
Because she didn't have the tools that I have.
Dry eye syndrome, it's actually a common condition. It occurs when the eyes, they don't produce enough tears or when those tears evaporate too quickly. And it's actually estimated that close to 16 million Americans suffer with that dry eye feeling. And if it's left untreated, it actually can lead to eye damage, which I know you're probably like, really? Eye damage? Yes. We need the tears in our eyes for proper function of our eye movement. And so there's so many reasons why this happens. But I will say that, you know, most people that deal with dry eye syndrome, DES, are, you know, a little more mature in age, like 60 plus. That's kind of when it all kind of starts to happen. And again, women are more subjected to this, mainly because after menopause and hormones are changing. But men can have this as well, right? And there's a lot of different risk factors. You know, just even being on screens a lot. I know when I'm on the computer a lot, or I'm on my phone, or I'm watching a movie or whatever it is, my eyes tend to get a little dry. And so I have to stop. I have to do some exercises, which we'll talk about that here in just a minute. But a lot of times people are also dealing with dry eye syndrome because they take certain medications, all right? Like antihistamines, right? That dry you up. Contact lenses, they can really dry your eyes out. And if you are someone that works in, maybe you work in the outdoors, right? You've got this environmental factors, like it's really windy out, or you're around a lot of smoke, that can really lead to dry eyes. And so a couple of things that you can do is just like warm compresses, right? Like that's simple, that's easy. If you just apply like warm compresses to your eyes, it can help stimulate the oil production in the glands that are responsible for that, for those tears, and to give some stability in that tear formation. Like even maybe in the shower, you know, or just, you know, get a wash rag and get it really warm at the you know, in your bathroom, in the sink, and then just put it up on your eyes and just hold it there for a few seconds, maybe 30 seconds or so, and just allow your eyes to relax and allow that compress to really start to, you know, stimulate the glands that will help with that tear flow. And so that's what we really want to do, right, is to have some natural remedies. That's one of them. Super simple. You might not be getting enough omega-3 fatty acids. So that's something to consider as well. Give us some practical steps for someone that's like in disarray and really doesn't know what to do.
So I started with the dishes, meaning I started trying to get the dishes done every single day. Okay. And so I call it dishes math, right? Like dishes math does not work the way that math is supposed to work. Meaning one day's worth of dishes takes 10 to 15 minutes. I did not know that because I would wait 5 days until every dish was dirty and we were drinking out of measuring cups, right? And I would take 5 hours to do the dishes. And so logic says if I waited 5 days and it takes 5 hours, then doing it every day would be 1 hour. I don't have an hour to spend doing the dishes, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not how dishes work. Dishes, one day's worth of dishes is 10 to 15 minutes. 2 days worth of dishes is an hour because now you've got all the rearranging and all that. 3 days worth of dishes is hours because there's so much to move around, right? And right. So much to do in addition to just doing the dishes. And so that doing the dishes every day, trying to keep them done, is the thing that helped me see that and understand. And knowing that and understanding that then was my motivation to be like, okay, well, I want to get these done in 10 minutes today so they don't take an extra, you know, 40 minutes tomorrow. Right. So yeah, that is where I started. And I started adding habits each week. I would basically
habit stacking.
Yeah. Well, I would take 7 days and I would tackle the same space every day for those 7 days. And over the course, and before it turned into a problem again, because that's what I used to do, is I would tackle it and then I would then walk away acting like it was going to stay that way, and it didn't. So when I tackled the same space every day for 7 days, then I would start to figure out, oh, this is how to actually keep it under control, right? And so I would add different habits every day. I mean, every week for the beginning. At the same time, I was decluttering. So I always tell people, I'm like, start with doing the dishes. Like if you don't know what to do, do the dishes. If all you can do the dishes and you're going to be so much better off. Right.
Yeah.
But with any time that you have, declutter. And my process for decluttering is the no mess decluttering process. So like we don't pull everything out of the space. We just go item by item. I have a 5-step process.
Mm.
So that you can work in any amount of time that you have, right? Like you don't need to set aside a day or an hour. You just are like, I'm going to work on this space and I'm only going to make progress. I'm not going to make piles or put things in boxes or whatever. I'm going to make progress, right? So I do this and those two things together will change your home. But if you can only do one thing, do the dishes, but then always declutter too, because that's going to make doing the dishes easier, right?
There has been some research in Japan that has said that IWT, which is interval walking training, has actually helped to improve lower blood pressure, depression symptoms, and stroke while enhancing that muscle strength and that bone density, and also increasing your immune system function. So I was thinking about this a little bit because how often has it just been ingrained in us? And I've been one to ingrain it as well. 10,000 steps every day. And I've always been on a mission of taking those 10,000 steps. Now there's maybe even something different that we can do that's even better than those 10,000 steps. Well, again, Japanese researchers have brought in IWT, interval walking training and slow running. 30 minutes a day is what they found out. 30 minutes a day was especially helpful for middle age to senior citizens to go from like a slow walk, like just a slow, relaxed walk for 3 minutes. And then you bump up to a brisk walk for 3 minutes. Okay. And you do that in like a repetition for 30 minutes. And I said every day, but I believe it's only like, you only need to do it 3 to 5 days a week for 30 minutes. And you will have greater benefits than the 10,000 steps a day.
There's a lot of misconceptions about anti-aging persistence in popular culture. For example, the idea that aging is just solely determined by genetics is misleading. I did mention genetics. Yeah, that's a factor. But again, those lifestyle choices and environmental factors, they play a bigger role than most of us even realize. If you're a smoker, I mean, let's get real. You're going to see that you are going to age more quickly. If you are a heavy drinker of alcohol, you're going to see that you're going to age quicker. So, you know, we have a lot of choices with this anti-aging way in which people are starting to think. And it's like, oh, wow, did I make some poor choices over the years? And maybe that's why I'm not aging as gracefully. Or, is it too late? Can I still change some things about my life and age more gracefully and better? Of course, it's never too late. So adopting healthy lifestyle habits is truly essential for slowing down that aging process. And you know, I'm going to say it, but regular physical activity is important. We also know that proper nutrition, y'all know I'm going to talk whole food plant-based, right? But proper nutrition is important for anti-aging. If you're eating the standard American diet, get ready to age quicker. Get ready for your organs to shut down faster, wrinkles to set in, and you're not going to live a very long life. So those are two main things, right? Getting physical activity, whether it's silly and simple, or maybe you're doing the burpees and the high intensity, you just need to know that you don't have to do the high level in order to see and reap the benefits, okay? But the proper nutrition is important, getting ample amounts of sunlight, breath work, make sure you're breathing, prayer and meditation, having a solid community. If you don't have solid relationships and community, I can't stress that enough. It's so important that you find your tribe because you will live longer and it's more anti-aging when you have community.
You know, I focused solely on nutrition for 6-7 years. And, one day I got this kind of download from the Lord, like nutrition's important. It's really important, but there's a bigger picture to this. Mm-hmm. And he pointed me to the book of Genesis, the creation story, and just really revealing that, you know, we are a part of creation. We are a part of this bigger story, and we are meant to work, like I like to say, in relation with creation. And when you look at the Genesis, at the creation story, there's, we know God said, let there be light. There's light, there's water, there's earth, there's plants, there's animals, there's, you know, humans come alive through God's breath, made from the dirt, made from the ground, made from the earth. He calls us to rest. He calls us to be in fellowship. And these are all these things that, like, these are all important things. Food is just one piece of that. And when you think of the fact that God, you know, created existence, he created order from chaos. That's what it says right in Genesis 1:1. There was what the Hebrew phrase for it is tohu vavahu, which means basically means chaos. And God spoke order and being into life. And, you know, we can have order in our body when we follow the way that he ordered creation. And so really it came to the point for me where almost nutrition is incredibly important, but it's, like I said, one piece of the puzzle. And in a lot of cases, I think almost down further on the totem pole for me in priority, because if you think about it, you can't even grow food without the sun, you can't grow it without the earth, and you can't grow without water. Right. And so in the Genesis prescription, which is kind of my framework for teaching people all of these different ways God made us to be, well, all these different inputs, that's the order that we go in. We start with light and we talk about water and the importance of grounding and plant foods and animal foods. I think a lot of Christians, I get that question all the time, you know, shouldn't we just eat plants because we started in the garden? And I'm like, well, if you read past Genesis, you would know that we did not stay in the garden, and we, you know, we, God does give us meat. Maybe one day that will change when Jesus returns. But for now, we are, you know, we're given meat. And so there's just a lot of different things. I think that foundations we can put in place when we really look to what I call the Genesis prescription.
Well, I hope you enjoyed reliving some of those moments as much as I did. Again, thank you so much for being a special part of the Visibly Fit podcast and joining me on this incredible milestone episode, but also throughout the entire journey. And I hope you'll be with me for the rest of the journey. Let's hear it for 100 more, maybe 200 more. I don't know. We'll see what God has in store. But thank you. And the way that people can find out about this podcast is by you helping me get people to be aware of the podcast by giving it a 5-star rating and a review. It's really simple. Just write out a positive review, and it will help to take this podcast up the ranking, so to speak, so people can find this particular health and wellness podcast. So thank you very much for doing that in advance. I'm asking and appreciating your consideration. Again, thank you so much for tuning into this episode. I look forward to seeing you on the next one, but you know where to find me on social media. But also, if you are interested in my website, you can go to wendypet.com or getvisiblyfit.com. All right. Thanks so much for tuning in. Love you guys. Catch you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Well, that's a wrap for today's show. So thank you so much for tuning in. I love spending this time with you. To learn more and get more free resources, just head on over to wendypet.com. And thank you in advance for sharing this episode and this podcast, following and subscribing not only to this podcast, but finding me on social media, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, wherever you are, I'm probably there too. Until next week and our next podcast time together, make it a Visibly Fit day.